You know, I had someone come in once and pick up a book, and I remember them saying like, oh, this is so me. This is who I am. And I feel like that's just like the best gift that working and doing the work that we do can give to us.
Welcome to Cambridge Forum. I'm Mary Stack, and today I'm delighted to be handing over the microphone to Andrew Kimball, who'll be guest moderating today's programme. I'm equally pleased to be shepherding a topic dear to my heart, books and bookstores, independent bookstores. Gloria Steinem once said, wherever I go, bookstores are still the closest thing to a town square, and I couldn't put it better. Without further ado, I'm going to hand over now to Andrew, who, when not frequenting new and used bookstores himself, has his hands full being Director of Online Lifelong Learning at BU School of Theology. Welcome, Andrew.
Thank you, Mary, for such a warm introduction. As Mary said, I am a bibliophile who loves frequenting local bookstores for several reasons. I enjoy their feng shui and aesthetic appeal, the way the spaces represent the interest of the people in their neighborhood or community. And of course, it gives me the chance to browse the stacks with other like-minded people in search of a new find. Well, something exciting and rather unexpected has happened over the past few years. More than 300 new independent bookstores have opened across the country, and the bookstore owners and their inventory have become much more diverse. This is partly attributable to the pandemic. People were shuttered in for extended periods and had time to read. Secondly, they recognized their hunger for a place of connection that was safe. The public had rallied to support their local bookstores during lockdown, and when restrictions relaxed, people returned to their favorite places. These precious bookstores represented much more than anonymous Amazonian warehouses for purchasing. They had become much needed centers for community engagement and dialogue, a nexus of ideas and human interaction. Consequently, an array of people from various backgrounds used their savings or government stimulus checks to pursue the dream of opening their own bookstore. Despite the numerous ongoing challenges, few seemed to have regretted their decision. To help us understand what is involved in running a bookstore and to meet some of these special book folk who are prepared to dedicate their lives to this cause, we are joined tonight by three guests who reflect quite distinct areas of our literary marketplace. First, we have Leonard and Clarissa Egerton, who are the owners of Frugal Bookstore in Roxbury, the only Black-owned bookstore in Boston. Since 2008, they have worked diligently to be a place where people in their community, young and old, can see themselves reflected in the pages of books. They are joined by Christina Pastucci-Ciampa, the owner of All She Wrote Books in Somerville, which is an inclusive, feminist, and queer indie bookstore that supports, celebrates, and amplifies another section of underrepresented voices. And finally, we welcome Rachel Cass, the general manager of Harvard Bookstore in Cambridge. Harvard Bookstore has been a locally owned, independently run bookstore since 1932. Well, let's get started. What do you think is behind the resurgence of the indie bookstore? You know, public libraries have experienced a resurgence because citizens are desperate for a third space, that is, a space that is not work or home. Do you feel the indie bookstore is sort of that in between, that third space for many people?
I think people just genuinely want somewhere close by to go. You know, to have a space where they can come in and like our bookstore is somewhere where people meet people. We meet a lot of people. We have a lot of gorgeous and beautiful conversations in our bookstore. We meet people from other countries. People visit us and they come here to visit their family. They bring their family here. We're meeting people from other states. It's become a place where people don't want to go outside their neighborhood all the time. They want to be able to walk around the corner and be able to get what they want. And fortunately, now it's, you know, for us, they want to be able to walk around the corner and grab a book and meet different people. So it's always been a place where, like the meeting of the minds. At any given time, you can come to Frugal Bookstore and just see folks chatting. chatting it up.
Yeah, Rachel and then Christina.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. I think coming back into the bookstore space, I remember being in the bookstore, this is pre-pandemic, but I remember being in the bookstore the day after Donald Trump was elected. And it was just, we were crying in the aisles and customers were crying. And it was this moment of like, this is the home that I want to go to. Like, these are the people that I want to be around and sort of process this with. And we've had many, many situations like that. It's a place that you can go to meet ideas and to sort of think through the issues that are happening in the world with other people who also want to be thinking those things through. And we see that in our author events, people sort of gathering together to talk about the issues of the day. But we see that just in the aisles. We see that in conversations with customers. You know, we see that when we're recommending books to people and the conversations that come out of that. So I do think that that's a really important space. Our bookstore is in Cambridge, obviously. I live in Melrose, and there's a new bookstore that's scheduled to open in Melrose later this month. And I'm going to be able to walk to it. And I'm so thrilled to have a bookstore in my neighborhood. And I don't need a place to go to buy books. I have access to books at work all the time. But I'm so thrilled to be able to go and have this place in my community. And I know there have been studies done about sort of the outsized level of engagement that bookstores bring to their communities beyond the sort of economics of it, but the community that they bring to the spaces that they are. So I do think that's a big part of it, especially when we were all home for so long.
For us in our bookstore, like during the pandemic, even though like we were all masked and like separated 6 feet and, you know, all the things, I think, you know, having a space to come and have conversations, even like to Leonard's point about difficult conversations, is the beauty of why our spaces exist and why they continue to exist. And I think that, you know, for us, like I think about with the recent bans of LGBTQ books in particular, I think of the issues with the Drag Story Hour. We continue to have Drag Story Hour, and we will continue to have Drag Story Hour at our space because that's what you do. But also, you know, people feel like this is a space that they can air out their frustrations, but that's also a space for folks that may not understand, you know, queer life and queer perspectives also come to be educated. So it's an opportunity for us to connect them with books to help understand maybe their loved ones, whether it's their children or friends or other family members. And I feel like that connection alone is just so powerful and so beautiful. And, you know, when you can have those spaces to have the difficult conversations, to challenge ideals and concepts and things like that throughout life, you know, like bookstore, indie bookstores are more than just us selling you a book and you walking out the door. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the part of this that makes us so important in our communities, because it's more than just the transaction. It's ultimately like those human connections, the connections that we have with each other. And despite our differences, right? Like, you know, we all have our feelings and thoughts on different topics and different things. We're still human. But the thing is I hope what we can do is learn from each other and be willing to be open and, you know, want to learn. And there's not a, you know, sometimes we see a lot of stories and things out in the news and things like that on Facebook that kind of tell us a different world. But I too truly, and this may sound naive, I truly do believe though that there are people that are willing to come to the table and hopefully learn. And what I hope to do, like at least in our space, is give them the tools to then learn and to change their not behavior, but to rethink and constantly relearn. And when we give ourselves the opportunity to constantly learn things, what the hope is that we have empathy for others that we may not necessarily understand. And so that to me is like the power here of like what we do, but what our indies do for people and why businesses like ours are so essential to the community.
What is your bookstore's specific mission and how did the store come into being? I think Christina, you will be first.
So All She Wrote Books is Boston's really only queer feminist bookstore that exists. One of the biggest reasons why I chose to open the bookstore was because of the fact that I wasn't seeing the representation of queer voices, of voices that have been historically marginalized across the board, aside from obviously going and walking into Frugal. There really wasn't much of that. And so I really wanted to see more queer stories. And that means not the same five queer stories or feminist texts that we constantly see all the time on the shelves. It was about different types of stories, like about second wave feminism, its flaws and its beauties. So having that representation in the store was super important. Yeah.
Leonard, can you tell us a little bit about the Frugal Bookstore mission and how you came into being?
Well, when it became ours, 2008, we knew that, you know, part of our mission was to change minds one book at a time. That's our slogan. And what that means is within our community, we historically sometimes looked at as having a low literacy rate. So we wanted to help increase the literacy rate. We wanted to become a place where folk could come in. They didn't have to go, you know, outside of the community to go to a bookstore. They could come right around the corner, right down the street, and come to a bookstore and see themselves in all the books that were in the bookstore. Just like Christina, representation, it means a lot. You know, people can come into our store and they can see not just the ordinary Maya Angelous and the James Baldwins. You know, we have a lot of local authors who look just like we look, and their books are in our store. So representation meant a lot for us.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Rachel, Harvard Bookstore has a long legacy and perhaps history. Tell us a little bit more about your mission and how you came
into it. So Harvard Bookstore started in 1932, before the days when there were real university bookstores, campus bookstores. So while our mission isn't sort of as specific as Christina's and Leonard's, we're in an academic neighborhood. We're right across the street from Widener Library. And we really see our mission as trying to make ideas as accessible as possible to people. So we have a really wide-ranging inventory, everything from fiction, including genre fiction, through lots of academic subjects, including philosophy, sociology. We have a huge history section. And we really want to be a place where people can come and engage in ideas, both through our selection and through the author events that we host. Yeah.
Thank you so much. All distinct missions, but somewhat related. And speaking of education and expanding one's perspective, we have to talk about the banning of books. We have to. So during the past 2 years, more than 1,600 books were banned from school libraries, according to a Penn America report, affecting 138 school districts in 32 states. In this political and social climate, do you feel even more of an obligation or responsibility to carry and sell certain books? Are you making ethical decisions about the books you carry? And in what ways, if any, does the banning, burning of books impact your mission?
I just listened to a report that I think it was earlier this morning about All Boys Aren't Blue and how the book is banned. I don't agree with it. And I don't make it a point to look at what books have inside of them. We don't buy books like that. We buy books that people want. And I think although I disagree, I think it's good that people keep saying ban these books because it becomes good for us. Then people come looking for those books, you know. So it's unfortunate that people want to ban what's inside of a book. Just don't buy the book, you know. I look for them, to be honest with you. I don't shy away from it, you know, whether it's about race, religion, or family, or whatever. If it's a book that stirs controversy, then I want the book in our bookstore. You know, and to help promote those, you know, those books that people, you know, I think it's really narrow to think that you have the right to say, oh, we don't want those books there, but you can have those books over there. So yeah, that's my thinking.
Yes, you know, it's like when mama says the fire is hot, don't touch it. Might have right. to speak for myself.
Try it out.
You know, many of the books that are banned right now are, you know, a good chunk of them have to do with LGBTQ plus stories, but there are also ones that feature people of color, which is even more bonkers. The thing is that like, we're going to stock the books and that's what we do. And, you know, and we talk about them consistently, but I also think like, then we are here. So our bookstore in particular has helped numerous amounts of other communities. So to shout out to Waltham, the little free queer library in Waltham, there's been news stories about that being ransacked multiple times due to people just being ridiculous. Just leave it at that. But when I saw that their they posted that someone went in and took all the books out of their library, I saw their post on Instagram and I sent them a DM and I was like, give me your address. No questions asked. Just give me your address. And I sent all the books that I knew that they had in the library back to them, because that's what you do. And you just like consistently put it out there and people are going to ban what they want. It's because they are afraid of what they don't want to understand. And I think that's the issue here is like, you have folks that are unfortunately very closed-minded in the regard of like being open to understanding that there are different perspectives other than theirs. And that scares them. That scares them that there are other things in the world that are not necessarily within their own bubble or whatever they want to put themselves in. And I feel like this thing, like with Florida and in particular, like we send books down there. We have customers that buy books from us. I've met multiple teachers from Florida who have come to the bookstore because they know of our space and they were visiting family and they were telling me of the things of the fact that they have been sent letters to be told that they need to take these books out within X amount of time. Otherwise they will lose their jobs. It has now gotten to a point where the ridiculousness of it is to an extreme where it's concerning. And at the same time, like that's why like places like our indie bookstores need to be there and be the ones that are like, okay, like we will continue to give you these books and expose you to this and let you know that, hey, this is actually banned. And you might be like completely surprised, but knowing and understanding is the first step to hopefully helping us fight these bans and consistently supporting those that are fighting these bans. And so to me, like again, we are constantly going at it, but it's an important fight because, you know, as a queer person, like who used to go to her little library, because I couldn't afford to have books as a kid. For me, not being able to see people that were like me on those shelves, that was hard. I didn't really get to see people that represented me as a queer person until I was like much older. And so, you know, and that's because I lived in a very white, very conservative community, and that sucks. And so, you know, it's important to like, the bans only hurt people. And like, that's just why, you know, it's so important for folks like us to continue to stock the books, to continue to make them available mm-hmm. and continue to talk about them all the time.
On the one hand, I agree with everything that Christina and Leonard said. I mean, so much that's behind these book bans is about denying the humanity of groups of people and denying the existence of groups of people. And so we try to show as many voices as we can. And so it's really important to us we have a banned books display in our store that sort of constantly rotates and we pay attention to what's in the news and just sort of making sure that those voices are seen and recognized. And in terms of, you asked about if we think about ethics in how we stock our store, something we've wrestled with a lot is sort of the flip side is we've recognized more and more over the years what can do harm to our communities and trying not to stock those things. A good example is sort of anti-vaccine books during the pandemic. And those are things that we want to make sure you know, I'm not necessarily not going to order it for somebody who asks, but we do try to think really carefully about both what are the voices that we're putting out there and are we making those accessible to people, but also is this actually adding productively to the conversation? So we think about those things a lot. We're looking for a real mix of ideas, but doing so in a responsible, ethical way as much as possible.
Yeah, when Leonard was speaking, I almost wanted to ask him whether or not white supremacist books would live on his shelves, but I would guess no, because there is an ethics and choice you have to make about what you expose your audience to.
That's true. You know, there are books that people would question. Why do you have this book or that book? And I don't want to be the person that says, you know, no, I'm not going to buy that book for you. You know, because everyone, that would be the same as banning books, you know, and we don't want to be those kinds of people or that type of bookstore. And truthfully speaking, like Rachel said, you don't want to promote like books that are against getting vaccinations. But if someone comes in the store, you'll purchase it for them. Some people come in and they're really quiet about it because they may be like hesitant to ask you to purchase, do you have this book? Yeah, no, but we can get it for you. It's a real thin line to walk with that because you don't want to be seen or known. Well, I can't go to that bookstore. I want everyone to come here, you know, from all over. Come and visit us. You know, we get any book that you want if it's not on our shelves.
So to echo your point about a thin line, I definitely understand that. However, like J.K. Rowling, not to bring up that person, but, you know, is extremely transphobic and hurtful to the queer community in their words and what they do and their actions and the continuous ways that they continue to spew that hate. So we don't stock J.K. Rowling's books, and we will not order them for you. And the reason why I talk about this is because, like, I don't want to ban or restrict anyone from getting anything. So what I do instead is I refer folks to other bookstores because, you know, our mission-driven bookstore is just that, is just crossing a line that we've drawn in the sand because we respect the community that we serve and we are meant to serve. And so, and it is, it's a delicate line. It's a totally delicate line, but I believe in standing firm with my feelings on that kind of example. It's the same with like other types of authors who are extremely hurtful to the LGBTQIA community. So we are taking a hard stand on that. But there are plenty of other folks I am happy to send you to that would be happy to order them for you. And that's how we handle it. But I talk about it as a way of why, you know, how we curate our store. It's part of our curation practices as an indie bookstore and as a feminist queer bookstore. So, you know, it may not be a popular, you know, opinion, but that's just how we operate. And, you know, it may have impacts down the line, but I don't waver from that kind of thought process and how our mission is.
I think it really does go back to that question of curation and sort of mission. And I mean, again, our mission has to do with making ideas as accessible to people as possible. And we do want to represent a range of ideas, and figuring out sort of how to do that in ways that we feel good about ethically can be different. But similar to Leonard, we'll order pretty much everything, but we are choosing the books that are on our shelves. We can't carry every book, even if we wanted to.
So incredibly insightful for someone like me, who's a pedestrian book lover. I just walk in, find something great, walk out. So thank you for sharing. What has been your best and worst experience in the bookstore business? What makes you proudest?
The greatest joy is when we see people come in and they look in the store and they're like, wow, look at all these books with brown people on them. It looks like candy, chocolate candy. Or when young folk come in and they say, oh, look at her. Look at her. She looks like me, or I do that. You know, when kids, children are in the store and they see themselves represented, and to watch young folk who come in literally as toddlers, and now they're 17 years old. We've been in business 16, 17 years now. That's the greatest, one of the greatest joys of owning the bookstore, to be able to have a place where we're able to serve our community, have a livelihood, and hopefully remain in this community and be able to pass it down to our children and stay rooted in this community. One of the worst things that happen is when we have to close. I could say that's the worst thing. There's always really, really good experiences in the bookstore.
Yeah, it's hard to come up with a worst experience at the store. Beyond, I mean, I think closing our stores was the hardest thing that we've done, and figuring out how to regroup from that. We all hate the word pivot after the last 3 years, but how to pivot and continue doing our business in such a different world. I mean, I agree that the people have by far been the best part of being a bookseller. One of the most special customers to me in my time here, there was a man who passed away several years ago now, 5 or 6 years ago now. He was 99 when he died. And when I started at the bookstore, he came to every single author event that we did. And we do author events 5 nights a week. And he was there basically every night. And the staff loved him, and we grew to know him over the years. And he was just interested in everything. He was a pilot. He had been a pilot in his career. He had been a photographer and an artist. And he was just wonderful and just really epitomized the like perfect independent bookstore customer who was interested in science and history and fiction and poetry and everything. And he was an extraordinary example, but that is our customer base. There are people who are interested in everything, and we learn so much from them. And it's just been really rewarding to get to know our community, and just the most smart, thoughtful people I've ever known are people I've met through the bookstore.
So I would say probably the worst thing is, obviously, not to bring up a sour subject, but receiving death threats for Drag Story Hour is probably the worst part of my job. It's not fun, but I have a candor of, well, you know, keep calling because it's not going to make a difference anyways. So it's probably the worst thing I've had to deal with as far as in the bookselling world and kind of dealing with that. But I think the most positive thing, again, is like, and echoing both what Rachel and Leonard said, it's people coming in and, again, just seeing themselves, the non-binary kid coming in and finding that story that they can relate to and that make them smile and feel seen. That is the most beautiful thing. And, you know, I had someone come in once and pick up a book, and I remember them saying like, oh, this is so me. This is who I am. And I feel like that's just like the best gift that working and doing the work that we do can give to us.
Thank you so much for your wisdom, insight, and candor today.
I'd like to thank you all for making the time to join us for this great topic today. The resurgence of the independent bookstore, with booksellers Leonard Edgerton of The Frugal Bookstore, Christina Pascucci-Ciampa of All She Wrote, and Rachel Cass of the Harvard Bookstore. So Cambridge Forum is made possible through the generosity of Herbert and Dorothy Vetter, the Lowell Institute, Mass Cultural Council, the Cambridge Community Foundation, and of course you. So if you want to donate or sign up to our list, please visit the website, cambridgeforum.org. Keep supporting your independent bookstores, keep buying books, and I hope to see you all soon.